If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for being with us today. We've got lots of stuff to get into. But first, quick apology to Rob Martier, who I misidentified as Rob Hart a little bit earlier.
I was channeling Rob during that update. Two good-looking Robs in the newsroom in one day.
It's an easy mistake. We make these mistakes here. But sorry about that.
How are you?
I heard him earlier. Good. How are you?
Not bad. Good to have you here.
Good to be on with you.
Always.
As ever. All right, my friends. So much to talk about today. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about a new sleeve that goes over devices when you go to concert venues, things like that, that completely makes your phone useless. We're going to be talking about that because I think that is pretty interesting. And it kind of stirs up some, ownership stuff, I think. And we're also going to be talking with Tribune reporter Robert Chanik about a sweater that was in the middle of a great controversy at Nordstrom and subsequently pulled out of the store, and also about a streaming service that Comcast has launched that will be hitting us here in Chicago. We're going to be talking all about that. But first, right now, we are joined by Kristen Shore. She's a healthcare reporter at Crain's. Hi, Kristen. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today. Well, it is that time where the Crain's 40 Under 40 is out, and there are so many interesting interpretations and so much conversation around it. So thanks for joining us today to talk all about that.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You know what sticks out to me? A couple things, really, about Crain's 40 Under 40 this year. And of course, there's always backlash, right? Because immediately some people always go, oh, so-and-so was robbed, right? So-and-so wasn't on there. But this year, what really stuck out to me first was how many food-based people are on it. And then also how many people from Jones Lang LaSalle were represented there.
Oh, I mean, that's an interesting observation. I think that every year, you know, the editors make the final choices. Of course, the reporters try their hardest to make great pitches and come up with really creative types and just people who are really standing out in their industries. I think this year there was just a real good mix of not only entrepreneurs who are really shaping the economy and people from really big companies like Kraft Heinz and United, but also a lot of creative types. You know, we've got Chris Swanberg, who's an indie movie director, Rhymefest. We have a paleontologist, a dinosaur hunter. So I think the editors try really hard to have a really great, diverse mix of people that really represent the city.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think the people in the startup space that were selected are interesting ones, too. There's Harper Reed, who's on there, who, you know, played such a big role in the Obama campaign around technology and, you know, was previously at Threadless and has done a real, you know, interesting things and has always had such a creative place in the tech community here in Chicago. So that's, you know, I think he kind of is easily in a couple of different categories here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, in terms of on the healthcare space, just because that's kind of my expertise, I was able to get three people in this year, which is always nice for a reporter. You know, one of the really interesting ones I thought was Dr. Marcelo Melicudi at Lurie Children's. You know, he's doing something that's really interesting, and it's all about price transparency. You know, he's really trying to make the doctors at Lurie Children's, which is one of the, you know, most prestigious children's hospitals that treats the sickest kids, really think about how much medicine actually costs their patients. Mm. Obviously, people are coming in and out of the hospital all the time. So he created this dollar sign project where essentially when a doctor signs into an electronic medical record and chooses a medicine to prescribe, this little dollar sign scale appears, and it shows how expensive or cheap a version of a drug could be. So far, it's on track to save $4 million a year.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
I know. That's amazing, too. I mean, hospitals are really looking for every way they can save money and improve quality these days. Another one that was on my radar was Jason Montree, who is the president of Land of Lincoln. It's a healthcare co-op. It's a new health insurer. Health insurance is really competitive these days. They sell plans on the Obamacare exchange. So just a lot of really interesting people that were able to make the list this year.
And you know what? I've had this feeling for a while that it certainly seems like Chicago is entering into what certainly feels like it seems like we're about to be this hub of biotech in the startup space, because I feel like there's so much happening here with innovation and medicine and you know, things around that topic that are so interesting that I would be so excited to see if, you know, in the next couple of years we took that space, and, you know, Chicago was really known for that. Do you get that sense that that's happening here more than other places?
Well, I think there's definitely a vibe in Chicago, and people really are trying to create that space. You know, there's Matter is the big health tech hub in next to 1871 in the Merchandise Mart, mm-hmm. and they're doing really interesting work trying to meld together entrepreneurs, doctors, and then investors who will essentially make their visions and dreams realities. The city is really, you know, is really pushing innovation. And I think in health and technology, yes, I think you're right. I mean, I think it's only going to get bigger.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So what other things stuck out for you on this list this year?
Well, I think that, I don't know if you guys got a chance to look at the videos. The videos are really interesting this year. Mm-hmm. We did something a little different where we followed a couple of the people just in their daily lives. So it was more of a slice of life instead of just, you know, looking into a video and answering questions. We followed Rhymefest around the opening of his documentary, and he talked about reconnecting with his father, who was homeless and had been presumed dead. Mm-hmm. We followed around an architect who took us around the Riverwalk and just pointed out really interesting buildings that he loved. Marie Tillman, whose husband, Pat Tillman, was killed in friendly fire in 2004, she runs a foundation to give college scholarships in his name. And she's also an entrepreneur in herself, and we followed her around and spent a day with her and her kids. And then a really neat video was with Nika Jones Tapia, who is the a rare clinical psychologist to run the Cook County Jail. And she really opened up about her life and her family growing up with a father who was in and out of prison and what that was like, and the lessons that she learned growing up and how she takes that into her everyday life running, you know, one of the largest jails in the country.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the videos are really interesting. I did notice that they seemed a little more as you said, slice of life, kind of a day in the life documentary style than just, you know, sitting there interviewing and having, you know, answering questions, which have always been great. But this is, you know, I feel like we walked away from them knowing the person behind the job a little bit better.
Right. It's more of a slice of life, and you can actually see them in their environment and how they interact with people. And it's just a really interesting, a different look than we've done in the past.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for being with us today and talking all about Crane's 40 Under 40. You can read about it at chicagobusiness.com. It's right there. There's a whole section, lots of stuff. You can see all those videos. It is all good. Kristen Schorsch, thanks so much for being with us today, and we'll talk to you again soon. Enjoy your Saturday.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, my friends, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking about an interesting advancement in technology that is going to be appearing at concerts and shows you may be going to this very weekend. And we're going to be talking all about that when we come back on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today on this very beautiful Saturday. It's chilly, but it's sunny and lovely, and everybody out here on Michigan Avenue is so smiley. I just love it. I'm thrilled to see that, because normally by this time of year, it's gray and gloomy and people are crabby, so I'm happy to see the smiles. My friends, we have got to discuss something. So as you know, Dave Chappelle is coming to Chicago this evening, and tomorrow evening he will be doing a show. Comedian Dave Chappelle, we all know that guy, right? He had the show for a while, very funny man. He is doing an interesting thing that I had a very strong reaction to, and I'm curious to hear your reaction too. So as ever, taking your text messages and calls at 312-981-7200. So here's the deal. So if you are going to Dave Chappelle's show tonight or tomorrow, when you walk in the door at Thalia Hall, you're going to be presented with a little sleeve. It looks like a little, like a neoprene, almost like a little glasses case, right? And you will be required, keyword, to place your device in the sleeve and seal a little lock. And then once you proceed to go into the venue, the lock is locked. in a way that you cannot do anything about it. It is locked. It is shut down. It is there. And this sleeve disables your phone. And this is all, you know, Dave Chappelle has said specifically, and it even says, this is sort of the fine print on the ticketing website. It says, per the artist's request, there will be no cell phones allowed inside Thalia Hall during the event. Well, they're allowed in, but they're just going to be about as useless as a coaster. They're going to be doing nothing.
So you
will have to put your phone in the sleeve, lock it. Once you pass a sensor, it will lock down. So your phone is completely unusable. If you need to use your phone at any point during the thing, you can walk back out through the sensor into the lobby area or outside the venue, and the lock will become openable again.
Yeah.
I had a very strong reaction to this. Griffin, what was your reaction to that?
I thought it was a curiosity.
Sure.
I was interested, and it's a new business that hasn't existed before.
It is a new business. It's from a startup called Yonder.
Yeah, you were very upset.
I was even surprised by how strong a reaction.
It didn't upset me so much. You were like, they're trying to take my phone. It was.
I was surprised by the reaction I had. I mean, I felt like it would be one thing to maybe just kind of make the Wi-Fi really cruddy in the venue, but to make my device not accessible to me, where I don't even, number one, it sends a message of mistrust, uh-huh, saying I don't trust you to honor the rules set forth.
But should they trust you? I mean,
plenty of people, right? Plenty of people violate that.
I mean, not you personally. Well, I didn't mean to
I'm trustworthy,
like
right?
That. Yeah,
but the general public, right?
People are going to use their phones.
People are going to use their phones. People are going to smuggle bootleg, you know, recordings of an artist, whether that's a band or a comedian or whatever. I get that. That's fair, and I respect their, you know, choice to want to preserve their work for only a live, a live performance or their own designated recordings of it. I totally dig that. The part that I'm sideways about is I'm not comfortable with someone. It feels like a house arrest bracelet putting this on my phone. I feel like, and maybe I'm grabbing at straws here, but I feel like there are situations in our modern world, and did we not just see one very recently in Paris, in which having a cell phone in a crowd would be a safety issue.
It is interesting timing for that reason. I thought about that too. I'm not a spokesman for this company, but it is.
We're going to have to find them. We got to get somebody from this company. Somebody from Yonder on
the
show.
Yeah, maybe next week. I did see, you know, you can take your phone out to the lobby and use it and then return to the show.
Yeah.
So it's just within this one space, but. No, it's a really good point. I do understand why someone, especially like Dave Chappelle, would want it, though.
Why Dave Chappelle in particular?
Well, because comedians are the kind of the one artists that practice in public, right? They can't prepare
That's
like
fair.
A musician should or
That's
could.
Fair.
They have to practice on stage, so even when their stuff is bad, people are going to see it. And when you become a famous comedian, people expect you to be great all the time.
To be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fair.
And so, yeah, and people being able to take video and, you know, put it online where it's there forever when this was just supposed to be kind of trying something new out.
An event, an evening.
I understand why that would bother him.
Yeah,
I'm also a big Dave Chappelle fan.
Well, see, me too. And I've long said his show that used to run on Comedy Central made satire work on a whole new level. I feel like it was a transcendent level of satire because it worked so well and it had people talking about really big issues about race and class in a way that we had not in this country for a while, at least not so openly. So, I mean, I would add this. If you go to a theatrical production, there is usually an announcement that says something like, per actor's equity rules, no photographs or video may be taken during the performance. And for some reason, people tend to honor that. I've never seen anyone whip out a phone during a professional play and take video of that. So is it that there's a governing body that makes people respect the artist and the performance more? Maybe. But then I would say, you know, the purpose of this startup, Yonder, I agree with them. I mean, I was recently reading a story written by a photographer, a wedding photographer in particular, and he was talking about, please, please, for the love of all that is holy, do not whip your phone out at weddings. And he showed examples of very beautiful, touching moments that he captured between, you know, a groom at the altar and, you know, seeing his wife or his bride walk down the aisle for the first time, and these like beautiful emotional pictures. But all around him were people standing up, stepping into the aisle and holding their phones out, even one an iPad almost obscuring the groom's face. So I agree with that. I mean, yes, we should put our phones down and have an experience. I think that's absolutely fair. And Yonder's mission is to show people how their words, not mine, to show people how powerful a moment can be when we aren't focused on documenting or broadcasting it. I could not agree more with that. The part I'm sideways about is wrapping something around my phone and locking it and not letting me touch my own phone.
Right. You just want people to choose to live the right way.
I absolutely
choose to live in the moment. Don't be forced into it, because then there's something else at play that's a little.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It feels like a house arrest bracelet or something.
I wasn't mad like you were when I first heard about it, but there is something minorly insidious about it. It's like a little big brothery.
It is a little big brothery.
Also, I don't know. And Patrick is on hold. Maybe we'll get to his point in a second. But it seems like there might be ways around this.
I would like to do. I propose an A/B test here. I would like to see what happens if you have, say you okay. So Dave Chappelle is playing two nights.
And actually, there was such high demand, they added a show on Monday night.
Oh, that's
as well.
Right, they did. So I would love to see someone say, okay, night A, we're going to do it this way, where we lock out your phones and it will absolutely be useless. Night B, we're going to pass out some kind of sleeve with a little snap on it that has some kind of message on it. Like, please respect the art, you know, please respect the artist's wishes and keep your phone off during this performance. And it would be curious just to see what happened. Just kind of like watch the audience and see what people did.
Yeah.
Let them choose to do the right thing versus forcing it on them. Admittedly, I get way too hung up on doing the right thing and civility and ethics, and that's something I think about a lot. So
yeah.
I'm probably overestimating people, maybe.
This sleeve, though, it's in between, like, taking someone's phone away, because they know that you want to have it on you. Like,
right.
I like the way they circumnavigated that.
Right. To take
you
it away,
get to keep it.
That becomes a liability issue for them if
right.
they don't get you your phone
back. Mumford & Sons, at their last tour, did have, like, a phone check-in where they asked people to leave their phone there, but it's long lines and, you know, yeah, some kind of liability. Maybe it could get stolen, stuff like that. So this is a way that you're in control, but you can't use it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
I think it would be more useful to just jam the signal a little bit. I mean, I've said that at sporting events, that the person who can solve mass Wi-Fi at sporting events wins, but maybe don't. Right. Maybe just kind of leave it and let it let the signal not be strong enough to get to make it work. And then people would give up quickly and just be like, meh. I swear schools do that. I've seen, you know, I do a lot of speaking and I usually will tweet and say where I am, things like that. But I swear there are some schools that just as soon as you walk in the door, your phone just does not work. So maybe it's a thing. Maybe it's all so Big Brother. Well, anyway, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking with Robert Chanik from Chicago Tribune about a very controversial sweater that has just gotten pulled from Nordstrom stores and about a new service that Comcast is bringing to Chicago. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon, this beautiful Saturday. It's chilly out there, but it is sunny and beautiful, and everyone looks so darn happy. Everybody out there on Michigan Avenue today reminds me of how people look after winter starts to fade and when springtime starts to bubble back up. People get so excited. Everybody looks smiley like that today, and I love it. It's all good. We're going to get through this winter smiling, my friends. We are going to do it. We're going to make it. Anyway, we still have so much to talk about here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Many, many topics. And we're joined right now by our good friend, Robert Chanik. He's a reporter at the Chicago Tribune on all things workplace and business and media and all of those things. Thanks for being with us today. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Amy?
Great, great. Great to talk with you. Well, I have many topics that I would love to discuss, but I would love to start out with this one that seems a bit ridiculous, but in fact, it was rather fraught, and that is the story of the sweater at Nordstrom.
The ugly holiday sweater. Yes.
Which has become such a thing. I think, you know, we mocked them for so many years, but now people seek them out, and there's really kind of a market for people. There's a market for very, very intentionally ugly sweaters because so many people have embraced them with the ugly sweater parties and things like that, right?
Right, the tackier the better. I don't know when it became cool. Now, over the top is definitely winning these contests and parties. So, yeah, these things are, you know, it's funny. There was, as you're referencing, an interesting controversy last month is really when it reared its head. But, you know, some of the sweater, they go for humor, and some people find it funny and others are offended. And there was an sort of an interesting dichotomy because both Target and Nordstrom were offering holiday sweaters that raised a few eyebrows, and the reaction to it was quite different. I don't know if you want to fill everyone in on what was happening, but
certainly
there was a Target was selling a sweater called the Obsessive Christmas Disorder sweater. Which
got people upset, thinking that they were trivializing mental health issues of people that legitimately do suffer from or do battle with OCD.
Absolutely. And shortly thereafter, really almost simultaneous to that, there was a controversy over a Hanukkah sweater that Nordstrom's was selling, which and hopefully I do my pronunciation correctly. It was high maintenance, sort of like high maintenance for women.
You got that. You did it perfectly. It was the good hard H, the high maintenance. You got it.
Right.
And indeed, right. People were, a lot of women in particular were saying on their Facebook page, you know, hey, as a Jewish woman, you're reducing me to the stereotype. Don't do that. You know, don't. You know, and there was a lot of pushback, and people flat out said this is anti-Semitic. And it was what I think is interesting is the reactions between the two stores, where Nordstrom said, you know what, we apologize, it is gone, and Target said, we apologize if you're offended, we're going to keep selling it.
Exactly, and it's funny. Just, you know, before chatting here, I thought I'd take a look, and Target's still selling the OCD Ugly Christmas sweater. It's on sale now. They've reduced the price a little as we get closer to Christmas, but still featuring it, you know, sort of unabashed that they felt it was, you know, obviously they heard the response. They apologized if it offended people, but they never pulled the sweater. Nordstrom, meanwhile, almost immediately after this thing started getting some press, they pulled the high maintenance sweater, and it's nowhere to be found on their website. So, very different reaction to the same kind of situation.
Well, it just speaks to the power of social media, of how, you know, the power people really do have to make, you know, to speak out when it counts, when they believe, you know, when they feel strongly about something that, in fact, retailers can, at significant loss of their own, they can, you know, be forced to make decisions based on, you know, based on uproar on social media and things like that. I think it's really interesting. But I also think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say one interesting, Nordstrom still sells ugly Christmas sweaters. They're pretty, you know, specific about the ones they pulled. And if I see it right, they actually still sell what could be a slightly offensive Hanukkah sweater.
Uh-oh.
And there may be some sexism in this, but, well, not really. They have one Hanukkah sweater listed. It says, "Come on, baby, light my menorah." And it's a guy sweater, I think.
Interesting.
The guy's pictured. So that one didn't offend as much. So.
Well, as a member of Team Hanukkah myself, I personally saw one that I liked on another website, and it said it had a loaf, a challah bread loaf, and it said something about challah back or something like that. You know, that's okay. I can deal with
works.
That one.
Yeah, that for
works.
Sure.
I mean, I would love to be, you know, I would love to be a mouse in the corner, right, and hear the business conversations when these big dust ups happen on social media, you know, and hear, you know, what does the CEO have to say about, you know, is it he or she just kind of going, oh, well, we can't win this one, let's fold, or, you know, no, I can't afford to make that decision, or I'm not going to buckle to that, or, you know, I would love to hear that, because I often think about, you know, leadership and how leadership sometimes is forced to kind of do a dance with social media voices.
For sure. And in fact, it was interesting. I talked to a marketing professor at Northwestern at Kellogg, Tim Calkins, and he was saying that the reaction of the two businesses really did reflect sort of corporate philosophy, that, you know, Target didn't mind taking a few chances in its marketing image, and Nordstrom a little more conservative. And as soon as this thing, you know, caused issues, they were, you know, whoa, we can't do this, and just immediately bailed. So, you know, he thinks it's pretty reflective of somewhere at the top of the, you know, management chain where they're coming down. And you know, in that article, one of the articles I mentioned, you have an a company like Urban Outfitters, which always tries to provoke reaction with its products and sort of apologizes, but, you know.
But keeps doing it. And so their apologies get a bit hollow, and they just kind of keep punching us in the face after apologizing for punching us in the face. Yeah.
I think Nordstrom was really actually caught off guard. They didn't expect the reaction and sort of miscalculated, you know?
Yeah, it seemed that way. It certainly seemed that way. So, I mean, it felt like a genuine kind of reaction and a genuine apology that seemed to, you know, put the social media uproar to, you know, it quieted it down pretty quickly because it was such a genuine reaction to it. But mentioning leadership has reminded me of another piece that you wrote not too long ago about bad bosses. It was so funny because you used some examples that I really love, and that is Office Space, which is a movie that stands the test of time. I think everybody can relate to the what's happening, the Lumber character, and then The Office and the Michael Scott character. And for as fun of a read as it was, in the story, you really talked about the very real price of having just a terrible boss and what that does to productivity and to the workforce.
Absolutely. It's, you know, this study, it was Second City Works, which is the business arm of the comedy troupe. You know, it was a serious study. I mean, obviously they took a light approach to the way they framed everything and categorized it. But, you know, basically, bad bosses are bad for business. I mean, that's what they found out. It's not so funny as anyone who's ever worked for what they would consider a bad boss knows. It can really crush morale and productivity and makes people sort of passively aggressive in terms of, hey, why should I bother going the extra mile when they treat me like this? And it's all different kinds of bad bosses affect people in different ways. But the bottom line is there's a real price to pay for a business that has somebody operating in their midst like that. And that was really, I think, the gist of it. Businesses need to look at, you know, what their managers are doing and how people are reacting and, but the people that are actually the brunt of it, that's, they know the truth. And I think it's 1 out of 7 employees nationwide said they have a bad boss, a Bill Lumberg, if you will.
Right. I think it's an interesting topic because it's not, civility is not something that necessarily shows up on a performance review, right? The things that are on a performance review are so measurable. Did you hit this financial target? Did you turn in this project? Did you do this? Did you complete this? Have you hired this or created this project or whatever, right? Rarely says, are you happy? Do you feel respected? You know, very rarely. It usually is like an employee survey, and they're usually only done because everyone is grumbling so loudly, right? They're usually done in reaction to a lot of employee backlash, it seems like. So it's very interesting. But what I loved about this data is that how it kind of split up bad bosses into different types.
Yes. Well, I said, you already mentioned my personal favorite, which is the Office Space Bill Lumberg, who, you know, just constantly in the movie, of course, you know, he finds people, makes them stay, work the weekends, obsessive control freak and micromanager. And it's just, you know, really the quintessential nightmare boss. And they categorize that. I think the Lumber character they called him a claim jumper in the study, which means someone who takes credit for his team's successes but not their failures. And of course, the incessant micromanagement. And they said when, you know, this is like the ultimate productivity deflator because basically someone's watching over your shoulder at all times, and it's kind of impossible to have the autonomy an employee may need at least at some point to do their job. And as I said, it's very funny from the outside, but not so much if that's your actual boss.
Right. And another type mentioned in this story was the kind of the Michael Scott type from The Office, the cool boss who just tries so hard that they become just so annoying and so alienating to their team, really. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to that one a lot, too.
Absolutely. And then when they have to be a boss, it's very hard to take them seriously since they're kind of your buddy all the time. It's hard to shift gears and suddenly take charge in a situation, particularly when there's, you know, some kind of crisis situation. So not an effective leader generally. You can't be your best friend and your boss, unfortunately.
Right. And we can't, of course, get through more than an hour of any radio show without talking about another character, and that is Donald Trump. And even he made his way into this list as kind of the, I don't remember, how did you call him, the unfiltered uncle, right, who seems like they mean well with this kind of blunt yet insider kind of crossing the line sort of advice.
Right, and basically they, you know, it's very difficult when they have no filters. Like they said, they'll say anything that has, frankly, Donald Trump has already shown. It hasn't hurt him as a candidate, clearly, but
right.
when it's your boss and you're subject to that on a daily basis, it's kind of hard to keep shaking those things off. And again, that's just another thing that demoralizes employees and makes them less productive. And also, you know, the ultimate thing, bad bosses make people leave. And that turnover is a real challenge for businesses. It's an expensive thing to keep trying to fill positions when people leave. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, very counterproductive.
I mean, I've long thought about the idea of civility in the workplace. I think that's such a big deal. And even when I've made hires myself, I've always taken that into account because I think that's really the only moment you can think about civility. You know, you can match, say, 5 or 10 candidates with a skill set that you're looking for to fill a role. But really, I think you have to hire for civility because it really does take one complete jerk to really ruin the team and start making people leave and making people just not want to be there and seeing that productivity just tank.
Absolutely. You know, it's sort of toxic, you know, when particularly if that's your boss.
Right.
It's very hard.
I have this feeling that somewhere people out there listening to they're looking at their radios and nodding right now like, oh, yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. That guy. Right. Because I think it was, you said 1 in 7 employees nationwide report having a jerk of a boss. But I bet it's probably higher at certain times of the year or, you know, during certain projects or things like that where people just feel, you know, stifled by their boss or really just, you know, unable to do anything or unable to feel empowered because they have a micromanager or they feel so criticized they doubt themselves or things like that. And that's no way to be. That's not going to help anybody out.
For sure. I actually thought the number would be higher too, but, you know.
Well, so did
my own personal experience.
Right. I know, right. Maybe we'll talk about that a little later, right?
So
as Second City Works had this data, were there any solutions to it of, you know, how to try to smooth over the workplace or how to deal with this with an HR department or anything like that?
Well, they did. They said that, and I'm going to try to look for the actual wording, but they did say it was solvable, fixable in certain cases. You know, like training for sensitivity and teaching. In fact, they use the words collaboration, communication, and empathy are teachable mm-hmm. skills. Although, yeah, I don't know.
But to some extent, you can take, right.
Yeah, you can take a bad boss and make them, you know, more sensitive and understanding. And I don't know about teaching empathy, but that's what they said. So
I know I kind of cringed at that one. I don't know if you can teach that. I think that's either you have it or you don't kind of thing.
Right.
Right.
But they did acknowledge that certain bosses are beyond redemption.
right.
and not much you can do other
right.
than part ways, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe that unfiltered uncle type boss that we mentioned previously, maybe that's one that I don't know how much you can do with that one. If some people are resistant to having a handler or training or anything like that, it certainly seems.
Yeah.
All right, my friends, we're talking with Robert Chanik from the Chicago Tribune all about bad bosses. But when we come back, I want to talk about another thing, something that's coming to Chicago that I think might make a lot of lives a lot easier as we move into, as we become more and more dependent on our devices. But we will talk to him and find out. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN on the Wintrust Business Lunch. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, just a second ago, we were talking with our friend Robert Chanik from Chicago Tribune. You know him, you love him. He's an expert on all kinds of things in the business world. And, you know, we were talking about this Hanukkah sweater that was in the Nordstrom stores that was pulled after a lot of backlash on social media. And what we were talking about was how the sweater said high maintenance. High is a word that means to life, but it was kind of a play on the idea of high maintenance. But a caller called during the break, and she pointed out that the sweater, in fact, said something else. That said something along the bottom of it. It said something I don't even want to repeat, but that if that is the case, and I need to go look this up after the show, but if that is indeed the case, I should hope they pulled that sweater. Robert, did I miss a piece of that sweater? Was there something else on the bottom of it?
Actually, and I have to look at, I remember it did say something, but that never went to market. I actually called the company. This company is in, I think, Minneapolis, Fall Real. Mm-hmm. And an initial prototype had a much more offensive second line on the sweater. And that they never went to market, but it did show up on some website when they were selling it, but it was not actually on the sweater. They never sold the sweaters with that second line on it.
Got it.
So what people could get was just the high maintenance one at you know, like you saw at Nordstrom and online. I mean, it's still available online at, I think, Fall Real, their website, and some other retailers.
Okay. Glad we cleared that up, because I heard that. I went, what? It said what?
Yeah.
Like, that's so offensive. Okay. All right. Woo.
Right.
We've got that cleared up.
That one never actually made it to market. So it's
yet
just
somewhere someone thought it was a good enough idea to make a mock-up, at least try to prototype it or something like that, which in and of itself, I feel like there should have been some kind of stopgap going, wait a minute, that's a really offensive thing to say. Don't do that.
Yeah.
So, but at least someone at some point got in on that. So, okay.
We had enough sense not to actually sell that one. So, yeah.
We have clarified that indeed. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? We had so much more to talk with you about, but I'm afraid we have run out of time already. Time flies when we're having fun and when we are talking about all of these fascinating issues. So I hope you'll join us again on another show, my friend Robert Chanik.
I would love to. I just received a tweet which reminded me I should say, I love my bosses.
Was that tweet from your boss?
No.
Okay.
Indeed. I'm a close personal friend.
All right, good. We all love our boss here, definitely. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
You too. It was great. Thanks. All right.
You can read everything he writes at chicagotribune.com and, of course, find him in the print edition of the Chicago Tribune. We got to take a little break and then get you to news. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN.